and welcome to English for International Students. Today's episode will feature an interview with Odbayat Batsakhin, an international student from Mongolia, the land of the blue sky. The interview will be followed by today's language focus. Finally, we'll conclude the episode with Culture Corner, in which Lindley will discuss high-context culture versus low-context culture. We hope you enjoy!
Remember, you can find a transcript of today's interview at our blog at englishpodcastblog.wordpress.com. You can also email us with any questions at englishpodcast.ttu@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm sitting here with Odbayat Batsakhin from Mongolia. He's studying at a college here in Texas. Odbayat, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Great, you?
Awesome.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from?
Yeah, I'm from Darkhan, Mongolia, which is northern side of Mongolia. And my hometown, Darkhan, is second biggest city in Mongolia, but it's only 70,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, small.
Yeah, that's not very big.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess what we really wanted to talk to you about today were some of the differences between the education system in Mongolia and the United States. Can you explain some of those differences that you've noticed?
Yeah.
Wait, first of all, how long have you been here?
I've been here 2.5 years.
Like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So what differences have you noticed in the education systems?
I think there are some notable differences,
okay,
such as, how can I say, like teaching methodology, you know,
mm-hmm,
like teachers, let's say professors here is more friendly, more nicer, and
mm-hmm,
explain things really
mm-hmm
understandable way.
Mm-hmm.
But back home, you know, college teachers didn't really, you know,
mm-hmm,
explain well the subjects, and
okay,
teaching methodology is very different, more like traditional method, you know,
mm-hmm,
how should I say, more like small children, you know,
mm-hmm,
and adults, the kind of relationship we have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the methodology in Mongolia is more traditional.
Yes.
And the students are treated kind of like small children.
That's right.
Okay, can you give me an example of that?
For example, like, as soon as sometimes professor comes, like, students sometimes need to, like, say hi to him or
mm-hmm
her, like, you know, kind of stand up or,
mm-hmm,
like,
raise their hand?
Yeah, raise their hand and
uh-huh
stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But in America, it's kind of different, more like friendly, like more like a friend, you know?
Yes,
yeah,
like a more casual relationship.
That's right.
Okay. What other differences besides teaching methodology have you noticed?
I love American college books.
Okay.
Really, really good.
Hmm.
Like Cengage Brain or
mm-hmm
lots of different type of online system, you know? You could do lots of stuff through online.
Mm-hmm.
Back home, we have no idea what this Blackboard is, what
mm-hmm
this online book means, is,
mm-hmm,
you know. Here, professor use lots of technologies, such
mm-hmm
as I said, mentioned Blackboard, and like lots of homeworks, quizzes,
mm-hmm,
discussion boards through Blackboard or like online. But we don't have such thing back home. Plus, I already mentioned books, you know. Books here are really, really good, really awesome, you
mm-hmm
know. Back home, I went to university back home, by the way, and there were like 500 students,
mm-hmm,
and we have only two or three books.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to go up there like 7 o'clock in the morning, just study a little bit. Otherwise, you can't get the book, you know.
Wow.
And books are kind of expensive here, but back home it's expensive as well, but I never had a book.
So back home, you did not have access to textbooks.
I guess I could have, but
mm-hmm
I guess I didn't, you know.
Yeah. So, like, it's not like every student has a textbook there?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
But here is kind of like a mandatory, you know, you need to buy, but you can buy in a cheaper way through like Chegg.com or like Amazon.com, you know?
So, materials are different.
Yeah, like America has, American universities and colleges use lots of online courses or like different type of resources. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So far you've talked about differences in methodology and difference in materials.
Yes.
Have you noticed any other differences?
Yeah, like classroom culture, I would say.
No? Okay.
Like America, I was kind of told you earlier, students are like talkative, you know, they're not really shy about what they're saying. But back home, students didn't get really involved, you know. Teachers or professors ask questions, nobody answers.
Right.
Most of students being shy about it or like being quiet, you know. It's just, how can I say it? Seems like Americans are more outgoing, you know?
Right. So probably communication or discussion is encouraged more in the United States than in Mongolia.
Yes. On top of that, Americans, I would say, more outgoing, you know, more talkative. Yes. Back home, people are shy, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And so does the teacher end up doing most of the talking in the classroom?
That's right. Or only few students, good students, kind of dominate, you know?
Right.
Like talk all the time and just others just sit behind, say nothing, you know?
Okay. So on top of the students being encouraged to talk more in the United States, you'd say it's also a personality thing too?
Yes.
Like Mongolian students are just more shy?
Yes.
Okay.
Like home or among the family members, kids usually don't talk. Mostly they listen, you know? Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so are there any other differences that you've noticed, such as, I don't know, the organization of schools, curriculum, anything like that?
I like, you know, like first day of the class, the professor introduces you, what's it called? Like a room setting or whom you're going to sit where or like, what's it called?
Seating arrangement?
Yeah, also like, how can I say?
The schedule?
Yeah, schedule also.
What syllabus.
Syllabus, yeah, okay. Sorry, just
yeah,
forgot. That's the thing, you know,
Proposing
to introduce your first day of class, like, it's more like expectancy, you know, what you, how many absences you can have and what do you really need to do in this semester, you know?
Yes.
Learning outcomes or like inputs, whatever, like talks, lots of group projects, you know, like some of that, everything, begin of the class. Well, I never, you know, had the background professors given us syllabus, you know? But I would say American universities are more organized, like giving you, you know, syllabus, like saying, telling you what the expectancy is, you know?
Yes. So the expectations in the United States classrooms are much more clear.
Yes. Also, I kind of mentioned earlier too, American professors are really like, I would say friendly, also like helpful, you know? Back home, I would say, you know, there were like no, how can I say, arranged appointment or like, what's it called?
Like a meeting?
Office hour or something like that. Professor never has such thing in Mongolia. And it's, I can't say like professor don't help, but American professor helps a lot, like telling you what to do, you know, like telling you like a really clear way, you know, what to do.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else that you've noticed?
American schools have air conditioning.
Oh, just kidding. Yes. Yeah, that's like, a big difference.
Thing is really, really cold here in America. Mm-hmm. You know, inside the room, outside, boiling hot. Inside, yeah. Really, really cold. I don't understand why, you know?
Yes, that is very true. And it's because they crank up the air conditioner whenever it's hot outside.
Yeah, but we never had the air conditioning back mm-hmm. home, you know, because mm-hmm. Mongolia is one of the coldest places on Earth. And, yes. But sometimes summer gets pretty hot, you know, mm-hmm. but we never had system or like ventilation uh-huh. system, fan. We didn't have like students just sweating, you know, like sitting there.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so now that you've outlined some of the differences in the education systems in the United States and Mongolia, do you have anything to share with us about some insight about why the Mongolian education system is the way it is? Something maybe about history?
Yeah, like Mongolia is, we were, you know, like mm-hmm. nomads, you know. Mm-hmm. We, like at least 30% of Mongolians are still nomads.
Mm-hmm.
And we, how can I say, invaded by Russia, like last, mm-hmm. invaded by Russia, like mm-hmm. 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Russians kind of took over Mongolia
mm-hmm.
under socialist system, like 70 years. Mm-hmm. And they brought education system, you know, like mm-hmm. Russian type of, like European type of education yes. system. Before Russians came, there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, it's fair to say there was nothing. But Russians brought the system, which is nice, and you know,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. And lots of Mongolians study in Russia,
mm-hmm.
some other like socialist countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought lots of knowledge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They brought experience, you know, European type of experience. And now Mongolian education is not too bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to America,
mm-hmm.
it's a different story, you know. Before I come to America, I always thought Mongolian education system is really bad, like
mm-hmm.
worst or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had always thought about it. But after I got to America, Mongolian education system actually not too bad,
mm.
but little bit unorganized, you know.
Right.
Little bit unorganized.
Yes.
Like, obviously American education system, I don't know how many years mm-hmm. been around, like at least 200 years,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously more developed in a yes. way, you know? But we're not too far behind.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So what would you say about the Mongolian education system compared to some European education systems?
I think Mongolian high school system mm-hmm. or like elementary school, how do you say, you know,
mm-hmm.
is really good.
Hmm.
Why? I told you, like, Russians brought the system. We study lots of math.
Yes.
Lots of, physics, chemistry, like, science classes, mm-hmm. you know. Actually, Mongolian students are really good when they come to Russia or, like, go to even America. They're really, really good. Because,
mm-hmm.
how can I say this? Car science, you know, like math, those type of skill we already had, you know.
Okay.
So Mongolians are really good at science and math.
Okay.
But some of the subjects didn't really taught well. For example, like language, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to learn English in university. I tried to learn in high school, in middle school. I tried to learn Russian.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really learn anything. I mm-hmm. would. It's fair to say that because we just learn grammar.
Yeah.
We never spoke, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We just memorize some grammar, memorize some words. That's it.
And that's something that I think the American education system has in common with the Mongolian education system. Because in high schools and elementary schools, in language classes, that's a big problem.
Oh, really?
Just learning grammar and never actually getting the chance to speak.
All right, but I have a lot of like European friends
mm-hmm.
who come from like Hungary or mm-hmm. like Germany or Switzerland. all those people know at least 5 different languages, mm-hmm. each one of those, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just crazy to think about it. And instead, sorry.
Okay.
Thing is, Europe is really comparatively kind of small, mm-hmm. smaller countries stacked mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. They can travel everywhere because of EU, European Union. And they can interact with lots of different cultures, mm-hmm. interact with different people who speak different languages. So it's easy to learn different languages. Mm-hmm. But I understand why, you know, America is kind of isolated, I would say, you know.
Yes.
Canada speaks same language.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico, I mean, they speak Spanish, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very true. Okay, anything else about the history of your country that you think has led you to the point that you're at right now?
History of my country?
Yes.
Can you, like, ask more specifically?
Yes. The history of the education. Isn't it true that the majority of Mongolians are literate?
Yes. Some point was almost like 100%
wow.
literate. It was like communist era.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, communism is force you to do something.
Yes.
Which is bad thing. But I guess sometimes it's good thing, you know. If some herders, like whomever, don't know how to read and write,
mm-hmm.
force them to learn how to read and write,
mm-hmm.
I would say that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
And some point I said almost 100% literate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure now. It's above 95%, 96-97%. I'm not sure, but everyone can read and mm-hmm. write.
That's pretty impressive for a nomadic culture.
I would say it because of Russians. You know, mm-hmm. Russians brought the system. Mm-hmm. So, before Russians came to Mongolia, maybe 5%, 6%, 7%
mm-hmm.
population could really speak.
Wow.
If you add lama, monks, you know,
uh-huh.
they are literate, but they can read and write in Tibetan,
mm-hmm.
not Mongolian.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But bad thing is Russians came, I mean socialist came, killed at least 100,000 monks. But at that time, Mongolian population was, let's say, 600,000.
Oh my goodness.
But killed 100,000.
So it was like a sixth of the population.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, Oddbayr, it has been very enjoyable talking to you today. And thank you so much for enlightening us about the differences between the Mongolian and the United States education system.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, you're welcome. And you have a great day and tune in.
Yeah, sure. Will do.
Hello, everyone. Our language focus for this episode is tone choice. What is tone choice, you ask? Well, tone choice refers to the direction of your voice, the movement of your voice. So, for example, we have level tones, which sound like this. So if you notice my voice is not going up or down and I sound like a robot, this is level tone. Then we also have falling tone, which sounds like this. So if you notice at the end of every statement, my voice is falling. And then we also have rising tones, which sound like this. So if you notice at the end of every statement, my voice is rising. So during this episode, we really want to focus on Oddbayr's voice and the tone that he's using and where he's using certain tones. So if you listen to the interview, you'll notice that at the end of statements, he uses a falling tone. And what we really want you to focus on is how does the interviewer respond whenever he uses different tones?
Okay, in today's culture corner, we are going to talk about high context culture and low context culture. When I listened to Adbayar's interview, I really noticed some things that he was touching on that I felt like related to U.S. culture and low context culture, so I thought it would be interesting to talk about today.
Yeah, that does sound interesting, and I'm not exactly sure what high context and low context means. So could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. So I first heard about this when I was living overseas and I went to a cultural training, and it really changed my perspective and helped me understand some things that I observed in my home culture of the U.S. and in the Middle East where I was living at the time. So basically, low context culture, which is common in like North America, a lot of Western Europe, those some cultures that are similar to that. And in low context culture, there is a value for explicit communication. When people look at sharing meaning, they want to use explicit communication. So what you say exactly is how you send a message, which is different than high context culture, which is common in like Japan and some other countries located in Asia, and Brazil, some other countries in South America as well, and some African tribal groups, and a majority of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And in high context culture, people rely on context to share meaning. Mm-hmm. So it's not just what someone says explicitly, but also if you and I are both listening to a speaker, mm-hmm. not only what is he saying, but what is his status in our community? What is his body language as he says it? What are his facial expressions and tone? And what do we both know to be true? Kind of the nuances culturally about what he's saying. All of those things layer together to make meaning. And we would rely on the context to make sense of maybe even just a few words that this person said. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Kind of. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So I think it kind of helps to understand the relationship that this cultural feature has to diversity. So for instance, in a very diverse place, it tends to be low context culture, mm-hmm. because the groups that are living in that place have less opportunity to share a lot of cultural knowledge. So if the groups have different practices, there isn't a lot of opportunity to have a shared body of knowledge, mm-hmm. and in terms of tradition and history, those kind of things, then you tend to see a higher value for explicit communication. Mm-hmm. If you and I don't have if we're not close and we don't have a lot of experience, a lot of shared experiences, then it's impossible for me to pick up on the small nuances of your communication. I just rely on exactly what you're saying to get your meaning.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So actually, in cultures that are high context, you see a value for long-term, deep interpersonal relationships. Mm-hmm. There's even an impact like in business dealings where oftentimes a real sense of trust has to be established before people can engage in business interaction with each other.
Okay.
Which is, sort of interesting. Mm-hmm. In low context cultures, there is a high value for very logical and linear kind of communication. Directness and the use of facts is highly mm-hmm. valued. But in the high context cultures, it really is a value for trust, deep interpersonal relationships, and that shared sense of meaning.
Wow, this explains a lot.
Yeah, so you can see how international students coming to the U.S. sometimes struggle with oftentimes they're looking for meaning when it's not there. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone who's speaking doesn't intend to say anything beyond what they are literally saying with their words.
Right.
Which is oftentimes a new experience. I actually did a little bit of research, and I just looked this up on Wikipedia, which has a very good snapshot of high context versus low context cultures. And it talks about a person who's coming from a high context culture to a low context culture. And I just want to read what it says here. It says, an individual from a higher context culture may need to adapt and or be accommodated when shifting to a low-context culture. A lower-context culture expects many relationships, but fewer intimate ones. A high-context individual is more likely to ask for assistance rather than attempt to work out a solution independently, and assistance is likely to be asked from the same few people. The high-context person may be frustrated by people appearing to not want to develop a relationship or continue to help them on an ongoing basis. The term hand-holding might be used to describe high-context individuals in an intentionally derogatory sense. Which I feel like when I think about students and what international students and what they share with us, that this is a common occurrence, that in a low context culture, there might be a big emphasis with putting really clear instructions and directions up on a website or putting those things in writing for someone. Mm-hmm. But someone coming from a high context culture expects those things to be shared interpersonally. So they might ask more than another student from their advisor or from someone working in a support department because they expect that that's the norm. Or they might expect to come to a new place and develop a strong group of friends who are all willing to provide a lot of help for each other. And they might find that some people from a lower context culture like the U.S. might be uncomfortable with that. Do you feel like you've observed that with students?
I definitely have observed that, and I did not know exactly what to call it, but I have observed that, and I also feel like it kind of goes along with certain communities being more communal.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Certain places being more others-oriented, whereas in lower context cultures such as the United States, we're more likely to say, do it yourself. And it's almost like if you can't do it yourself, then you're considered weak or like someone needs to hold your hand.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's true. And some of the things that I read did talk about a relationship between the paradigm of individualism and collectivism and this feature as well. So you can see how there's a clear relationship.
Yes.
So we are definitely interested to hear from you about this topic. We would love to see you post a comment on our blog or to send us an email at englishpodcast.ttu@gmail.com or to post a comment on the blog. We want to know where your culture falls in this paradigm and how you think this, how this has impacted you as an international student or how you think this might impact you and maybe how you've worked around that. We will also be posting a video on the blog with a little more information about high context culture versus low context culture. That is today's Culture Corner with Lindley and Rachel.
Hey guys, other Rachel here. Just wanted to thank you for listening and remind you to come back next week for Language Focus Unpacked, where we discuss tone choice in greater detail. Thanks for stopping by.